Welcome to the Unblocking Crypto Podcast. This podcast is not financial advice. It's meant for entertainment purposes only. These are just the opinions of a couple of rambling wrecks.
Welcome back to episode number 128 of Unblocking Crypto. Hal, great to see you again.
Good to see you, Jason.
Hey, I would say a slow week, although there's not as much news, but there's some pretty big news. And starting off, we now officially have a date for the spot Ethereum ETFs. So 1 week from today, or at least the day that we're recording it, 7/23, we should see at least three spot ETFs. I'm not sure what the final amount's going to be, but that's pretty exciting. And holy cow, a lot of the ETFs popped yesterday on the news.
Yeah. Yeah, so I listened to Bitwise. Their CIO and CEO and everybody, they are on so many crypto-friendly podcasts that I listen to. Like, the more that I listen to them, and the more I'm like, where are the other guys? Like, this has to be doing pretty good for them. I mean, they're doing all the work with big institutions and things like that. But then turning around and talking to the crypto, you know, the old school crypto people is great. So, you know, he talked about Bitcoin for quite a bit and the Bitcoin ETFs and things like that. But I'm always trying to figure out, is this good for Bitcoin, or and quite frankly, on this kind of thing, is it good for Ethereum? And do I need to like make some short term play in Ethereum so I can sell it and get more Bitcoin? And he said something that I haven't heard anybody else say, and he's talking to investors. So he said that he's got a theory that Ethereum ETF could be additive for Bitcoin in some ways, or maybe not completely like cannibalizing the Bitcoin ETF funds that flow in, because he said these institutions are so focused on diversity that to talk them into, hey, you need to make, or whatever, let's say you should be making an allocation into Bitcoin. Here's the Bitcoin ETF. You know, here's the everything about it. Da, 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 da. Well, he thinks they'll be more comfortable moving money into the Bitcoin ETF if they're moving, if they're 90% Bitcoin, 10% Ethereum, just because they're so used to diversity, when they're like addicted to diversity and diversification. So if they, it's like, it's more comfortable for them to sail in two boats than it is to sail in one. So they might just stay on the shore if there's only one boat. And I hadn't heard that before or thought about that before. I will say that I'm exceptionally bullish on Bitcoin and crypto over the last week or two, more so than normal, which was kind of hard to believe. But it's, you know, hearing that, it's like, okay, makes me think almost everything's good for Bitcoin, right? The blockchain size wars, good for Bitcoin. It seemed like really bad for Bitcoin at the time. Now look at it, right? So I'm until proven otherwise, I'm going to believe in the Bitcoin cycle theory, and I'm going to believe in everything's good for Bitcoin. And so I think that was something I like to hear on that side. And on the other side, the Ethereum stuff, it's really good for people that aren't buying the Ethereum ETF, because price goes up, you're staking and making a couple percent. Whereas if you're in the Ethereum ETF, there is no staking. And I assume that these companies could pay a dividend. They could stake the Bitcoin they buy with the ETF.
They're not allowed to.
Not allowed to stake.
Yes. The US will not allow them to stake, because then it becomes a security. So the Ethereum ETFs around the world are actually introducing staking, and the US is somewhat falling behind right now. So,
okay, I knew that it wasn't affiliated with staking. I just didn't know. I didn't know what the institutions could do behind the scenes. So yeah, okay, got it. Okay, so yeah, good for non Ethereum ETF holders. If price goes up in staking, I mean, you're talking about right now, you're getting 2 or 3%. If the price goes up 100%, now you're at 6% of your capital. So yeah, sounds good.
Well, I mean, I think you're kind of spot on with this. Ethereum ETFs help out Bitcoin, because to me, it's all about crypto as an asset. And what we need is more adoption in general. I mean, we're still pretty early on. Overall, the entire world is what, like 7% has adopted crypto in to date, right? So we still have a long ways to go from that perspective. And what's kind of cool too, and I don't know how official this really is, but one of the CFTC presidents kind of came out and said that there was a court in Illinois that confirmed that Ethereum is a commodity along with Bitcoin. So, and they also said that 70 to 80% of all the tokens out there are not securities. So this isn't something that the SEC agrees with right now either, but the SEC actually doesn't really make their views public. They don't say anything. They just come after a bunch of people. So it's exciting to see that courts are starting to say that. I mean, that's the first time that I've heard a court say Ethereum is a commodity. So I'm hoping that that will help move the SEC to do something. And I think there's even some bills in place to try to move all the crypto over to the CFTC. So we'll see what happens with that. I think the SEC is saying that they have a lot more people than the CFTC does, yet they still haven't really done anything with crypto. So the CFTC is spending like half of their time on crypto as it is. So we'll see what happens there.
Okay. I think it seems like the bigger crypto, an individual crypto gets, cryptocurrency gets, the more it gets non-security status. It's so, you know, even more reason to get big. I don't even really get into the smaller crypto stuff, but I get the feeling that, you know, we kind of crossed over the dot-com boom portion of this. And it's like, hey, they created all the websites and all the junk companies and all the crappy crypto tokens, and people know they're not going to succeed. And there's not enough capital to go around to make some kings and queens and princes out of this whole market. So they're still going to make them because they're so freaking cheap to make. I mean, it's easier than starting a company. And so what we're going to see, consolidation and failure of companies where they just go to zero, drop off and are forgotten. And then you'll see some consolidation to the larger, more successful, more use case oriented, you know, real companies, right? Like the Amazons and Facebooks will emerge, and or I guess MySpace and things like that. But the crummy websites that were created just to try to get on the ride are going to go out of business like they did in like 99, 2000. So I get the feeling that we're kind of there. Bitcoin's getting more and more, standing up more and more out of the crowd. So I think that the SEC is likely to have a change in tune in the next year or so, based on everything I'm hearing. So I'd like to see that. But yeah, like you want to talk about bullish. There's some people in the SEC that aren't there anymore, assuming the two candidates that run up for president are the ones everybody gets to vote for.
Yeah, well, I think there's one of the existing SEC commissioners is probably going to get approved to be getting another term. And she has not been crypto friendly at all, unfortunately.
Yeah, she's the worst.
Yeah.
She's terrible.
Yeah. So I did see the SEC has come out and told or announced that they are not going to be pursuing two different companies. Paxos is one of those. And for those of you that aren't familiar, Paxos was handling the BUSD stablecoin, which was a $20 billion business, pretty much, that because they did a Wells notice, it pretty much killed that entire business. That business was generating about $1 billion a year. Right. So the SEC did this Wells notice and found no issues at all. But that business is dead now. Stacks is also one that they came out and said it's good now. And Stacks is pretty much the way that smart contracts are going to happen on Bitcoin. So I think it's exciting for the Bitcoin community that the SEC didn't find Stacks a security, but it's something that's been ongoing since 2021. So it took 3 years for the SEC to actually figure something out. And during that 3 years, I know they've been working, but I think the CEO had left and started another company because he wasn't sure what was going to happen.
You look at what the SEC did with Stacks. So they're the first company when the SEC said, all you have to do is come in and register. Like when they were, all you got to do is fill out this paper and it's no big deal. They were the first one to do that. And then they were investigated for 3 years and then it just dropped. So it's like it's just a strong arm regulatory moat. Just garbage. And 3 years is time at all for the political process or for Washington, D.C. and regulators. It's a daggum eternity for cryptocurrency. Like, So yeah, I'm glad to hear that. But like, yeah, in 3 years, you probably got to move on if you're really serious in crypto.
And then I did see that there's a little bit of information out of the Washington, D.C. area. So one, the House tried to re-vote on SAB 121 to get a two-thirds vote to overturn the veto that Biden had, and that didn't happen. Although what's interesting is the SEC is working on making some exceptions for certain businesses on that. So, and I think that includes some of the custody banks, which is kind of one of the bigger issues. So I'm not sure why this is a bill if they're going to make an exception to it. Why would you do it in the first place? But it's, I guess, another SEC tactic of making crypto difficult in the U.S.
It sounds to me, not being the cynical anti-government kind of guy that I am, but hey, banks, you can't do this unless you're our friends. Unless you cozy up to us and you do and you play the game and you donate the way we want you to donate, you're not allowed to do it. But if you do donate, to so and so or this or that, then you get the exception. So yeah, that's the shadiest way to regulate.
Yep. In the meantime, the Republican National Committee came out and said they are supporting Bitcoin on their party platform. So they even put in there that they are going to defend the right to mine Bitcoin, ensure that every American has the right to self-custody their digital assets, and be able to transact free from government surveillance or control. So huge steps to see a major political party putting that on their party platform. It could be one of the first in the world in terms of major political platforms, right? I mean, there's a bunch of small companies like El Salvador and a few others that have done things like this, but this is huge. And there was a meeting, we talked about it a couple of weeks ago, that in DC, Biden's advisors were going to meet with some of the crypto leaders and lawmakers and talk about crypto. And that happened last week. It lasted about an hour, which to me seems like not much time. But one of Biden's key advisors was there, and it sounded like she took a lot of notes and understood what was going on. And now with Republicans coming out and saying this, does this mean that the Democrats are going to take some action at this point, or are they still just going to sit on their hands and try to fight the whole crypto?
So working backwards, are Democrats going to take some action? It is in their nature to talk a lot, very little. So, you know, they have already said multiple times and held meetings with crypto people, and then they veto SAB 21, right? So like they love talking, man, but when it comes down to it, they don't do a lot that's in line with that. It takes them forever. So I don't think, I'm not optimistic about the blue team coming around in any short-term way. So I think I'm not going to sweat that too much. The Republican platform talking about Bitcoin is a big deal. The named Vice President JD Vance has disclosed Bitcoin holdings from 2022 and on Coinbase, and he also has disclosed like QQQ. And I'm like, okay, well, I don't think you're paying a financial advisor to hold your Bitcoin on Coinbase. And if you're paying a financial advisor to buy QQQ and you're 39 years old, then you're not as smart as everybody tells me that you are, that you came from very humble beginning, like super low income, and got yourself through Harvard Law. So I'm like, a guy he's not like a super rich dude, but you know, you're not paying a financial advisor to do your stuff. You're just like, yeah, I'll buy index funds and Bitcoin. Like, I kind of like that side of that. I mean, it's like, I'm not a Republican or a Democrat, but there's a lot more things to like on the Republican side. You know, it was my understanding that like a car backfired at a Trump rally and then he fell. It was like, I just read some headlines. I didn't see the whole story. And so like that whatever happened at that Trump rally, like Bitcoin loved it.
Well, it was an assassination attempt.
I know. I spent hours pouring into that, but the initial headlines it did not indicate that it was anything special that went down. So once that happened, the Trump percentage chance of winning the White House and the Bitcoin price charts mirrored each other. Like they both went up 10%. In an hour. That's 10% in an hour for Bitcoin is incorrect, but he went from like 60 to 67% chance of winning. Bitcoin jumped dramatically, like on the hourly chart. And so Bitcoin is going to like a red team more. The more red team victories we see in November, the better for Bitcoin. You've got Trump straight up saying that he's in favor of Bitcoin. He said, you know, we talked about it last week, but like a reserve asset or reserve currency kind of, or a strategic national reserve. I've heard a couple other people say that. Vivek has been getting more and more FaceTime as we get into this Republican National Convention, which just reminds me of how good he is at talking and how much he likes Bitcoin and common sense. And so you've got the vice president holding Bitcoin, which I assume is on his own and not for political gains, right? 2022, no political party is really getting favor from owning Bitcoin. Cynthia Lummis was doing her thing, but you could, you know, back then we could only name a few politicians that were vocally pro Bitcoin. So like, that's a pretty good thing that he's into Bitcoin, just because he's either done enough research to get into it, or he listened to one of his friends and just bought it because he's tired of everybody watching everybody else make gain wealth or protect purchase power. I'll take it either way. And so, yeah, I mean, we talked about the political stuff for over a year now, and more often it's favorable. So yeah, if the red team wins, that's good for Bitcoin. And I posted something on Twitter, X, whatever, this week. When they printed all the money for COVID, they increased the money supply by 40%. I don't know what that is. Is that 10 years worth of money printed in 1 year? You know, I don't know, something like that. But when they did that, I think they advanced Bitcoin adoption by 10 years. But you know what I'm saying? Like, as they debased the money and they brought it all, you know, compressed the schedule of debasing money, I think they compressed the schedule of Bitcoin adoption too. And, you know, America, honestly, should be, you know, slow to adopt, because we have the U.S. dollar and it's powerful and it doesn't debase as badly as the other currencies. But when they do it, I think, you know, people notice. I mean, people still are really only talk about inflation. Inflation's down to, you know, right at 3%. So 3% on top of multiple years of 5 to 10%. So you're talking about, like, the prices are high, even though they're not going higher as fast. But so anyway, this from the political side, you got things are looking good. The interest rates, as inflation goes down, the likelihood of interest rates coming down increases. So that September interest rate target might happen and might not. You got improved regulatory, the chance of regulatory clarity is improving. Like, J.D. Vance hates Gary Gensler and is not afraid to say it in front of people. That's them. The likelihood of the whispers in the SEC's ear becoming more pro-crypto is really good if the red team wins.
I'm not sure who likes Gary Gensler at this point, other than Elizabeth Warren.
It seems like Elizabeth Warren, who has a substantial amount of power. So, yeah, give me that. And then, I mean, the liquid supply is going down. You know, there's like a million Bitcoin left to mine. So you're talking about, say, 5% of the total market cap is left to mine. I mean, it's very insignificant in the grand scheme of Bitcoin, right? So it's pretty much a static supply out there. And you've got Germany selling, and who's buying? People that are going to hold it and not sell it. So you're going from people that don't want Bitcoin to people that want it. And it's getting locked up. And then, and so now we don't have this. Germany holds 50,000 Bitcoin. They're going to sell it at any time. Mt. Gox, saying there's this fear that when Mt. Gox gets distributed, that it's going to be a ton of sell pressure. Okay, well, let's find out if it is or if it isn't. If it is, people are going to gobble it up and buy the dip. As that, I'm assuming that the Mt. Gox people wouldn't do things as stupidly as Germany did and just panic sell it on exchanges. When they're in and dump the market, you got that going on, and then you got minor capitulation is coming to a close. If you look at hash rates and hash rhythms, and I will say, don't ask me any details on that because I don't fully understand the hash rhythms and everything. But I will listen to people that do, and I will look at a chart that is definitely making a like a turning point in a in the chart in the hash ribbons. And if they say that's market minor capitulation starting to wind down, I believe them. So, you know, you put all this stuff together, and that's why like I'm very bullish about Bitcoin. And when the price goes up, everybody starts paying attention to it. More people learn about it. So yeah, give me all of it.
Yeah, you mentioned a couple of things that I'm going to backtrack to a little bit, but
I don't blame you. I ranted for a while, and I'm sorry about that.
And then when you talked about printing a lot of money during COVID and that increasing adoption, like 10 years, I think that did, but it also woke the rest of the world up, because the difference was in the U.S., we were getting checks for whatever reason. And I think sometimes I don't even know what the reason was that you're getting a check for.
That if I got checks, that's weird.
Yeah.
Exactly. It's not like I'm no Jeff Bezos, but like, why, you know, that was a wild thing.
Yeah. So, I mean, we're debasing the currency, but the government's still sending out checks to everybody to make them feel better about it. The rest of the world is using the US dollar as almost their main asset, and they're not getting the checks, right? So it kind of, I think, opened up a lot of other people's eyes, which is why you're starting to see a lot of adoption from other countries, and the US is starting to lag behind. The other thing with Trump, he's going to be talking at Bitcoin Nashville now. So he's got the 2 p.m. slot on the last day of the conference, which is going to be interesting. I think the other Republican senator from Tennessee is going to be talking there too. So you're starting to get a lot of Republican people talking at Bitcoin Nashville, which on top of course, RFK Jr., who has been talking at Bitcoin conferences for a little while now. So it's exciting to see that happening. And the red team is definitely making a bigger push on that side. And like you said, Germany is done selling, right? 50,000 Bitcoin, over 3 billion in Bitcoin they've sold in a couple of weeks. And there's been a little blip from a Bitcoin price, but holy cow, it is starting to come back with a vengeance right now, right? I mean, just with the announcements of the Ethereum ETFs and everything, it's picking back up. So, I mean, there is a lot of momentum now. We don't have that huge selling pressure that Germany had. And I think in a couple of years, Germany's going to look back and say, what were we doing selling at that price? But
there has to be people in Germany at fairly high levels asking that while it's happening. And just, like, I guess the machine, it's just political government employee nonsense. And it's not like, this isn't 2016 or 2017 where, hey, we just acquired some Bitcoin. This stuff might go to zero tomorrow. We got to dump it, right? There's no hurry to drop Bitcoin. Like, you're incentivized to sell Bitcoin as slowly as possible. This German government sold it. It, not only as quickly as possible, in the dumbest way possible. Like, hey, call up the ETF guys in the United States, see if we can work a deal so that as they're buying, they can just buy up our. There's got to be 100 different ways to sell this over the counter. There's got to, or call up any of these companies that has the that have these algorithms that find little sell points and things so that they're never crushing a sell wall on a market. On an exchange and dumping the price. Like, you could sell 50,000 Bitcoin without moving the market, and you may be able to do it over the same time period they did by just using an algorithm to just sell it in little bits over time and pick your spots based on the order book. They did none of that. So dumb. And so I saw somebody pointed out that they sold Bitcoin at the same pace that Bitcoin was mined in the first epoch, like 50 Bitcoin every 10 minutes what they sold it at. If you understand the issue rate of Bitcoin and mining, that's the time machine you don't want to go into, right? You don't want to go back and sell Bitcoin like it's 2000. And that's like, if you're in Bitcoin for a minute, you know, hey, we need to slow down and think about what we're going to do. If you're in Bitcoin as deep as we are, thinking about you basically unmined Bitcoin like it's 2010. Like, that's crazy. You know how many times I think about, man, if I would have just plugged my work laptop in overnight at the office and just let it spin all overnight. The laptop with a process, you know, in 2010, 11, 12, holy cow, look at all the Bitcoin that I had, blah, 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 blah. They just did the opposite. Man, what if we had 50,000 Bitcoin and we could just dump it really fast? Like, it's insane how dumb these governments are. So anyway, man, that's a crazy piece to this thing.
Especially after Europe has done this whole thing with MiCA and focused on being the crypto capital kind of thing of the world, right? I mean, they're leading the world in regulation, and yet Germany turns around and does this. Like, I know there was one person inside the government that was saying, "Stop! What are we doing?" But
it has to be.
Yeah, it still.
They've had it for a while too. They have to do is be like, "Hey, intern, you're only 25 years old. You go read. Should be 6 months to do it because we're the government and we don't do anything fast." Okay, then. So, yeah. Could you imagine being the lucky guy that gets to research Bitcoin for 6 months and figure that out, and then be like, "Yeah, if you're going to sell it, you need to sell it as slow as possible." I've already been buying. I've been buying Bitcoin for the last 5.5 months because as soon as I learned about it, I'm like, "Oh, the value proposition's there." So no, I think that was insane. But also, man, we're talking about Germany more than we're talking about the United States in Trump assassination. But Germany is like the guy in the European Union that has the job and works and pays taxes. And almost all the other countries in the European Union are the ones that are living on welfare from Germany. Like, they are the economic powerhouse of the European Union. They are smarter than this, right? They're a very technical culture. I mean, if you and I grew up where BMW and Mercedes-Benz engineering was top-notch. You compare that to American cars in the 80s, in 90s. The engineering that they did was amazing. It's dropped since, you know, dropped off and spread out globally. But Germany, man, what are y'all doing? And you know, like you said, the EU, like they seem like they're starting to get it, right? We need to pass some comprehensive legislation. Just saying that is better than governments of the past. It's amazing that they did what they did.
Yeah, and it's crazy too, because if you look at what happened with the ETFs, right? So the US ETFs had over $1 billion in weekly net inflow, which they haven't had since like May. It's been quite a while. And what I was reading was BlackRock had a day where they had $121 million flow into Bitcoin, which in comparison is more than most ETFs will have an entire year. And they're doing it in a day, right? So, and this is still July, which we're less than 6 months away from when the ETF started. And the institutions are still yet to really start jumping into this, right? So they absorbed $3 billion of Bitcoin from Germany pretty easily. And now they're starting to kind of set new records and come back alive from an ETF perspective. So I think it's going to be exciting. I think there's still a lot of room to run from here. And the rest of the year is going to be hopefully a lot more explosive, but maybe not so much in a presidential race campaign because we already had some of those issues.
Yeah. No, man. And I can't believe we're talking so much about Germany. I think we should probably close the book on Germany after this podcast. But the thing is, like, you and I know that the ETFs are buying up the German Bitcoin as it's sold. Germany knows that. Like, whoever's involved in that selling knows, oh man, like, we're selling and somebody's buying. Like, man, maybe we shouldn't sell it. You know, like, it's unbelievable what they just did. So I'm fine to move on.
Yeah, to be one of the second or third largest countries from a Bitcoin holdings percentage and then go to nothing, where El Salvador is light years ahead of you at this point.
There's a chance they never catch El Salvador. I don't know how to peg the chances because I haven't really thought about this, but there's a real good chance they never catch El Salvador. And Germany is a major global economic contributor with GDP. El Salvador is in triple digits of global GDP ranking. Mm-hmm. So the very least be like, hey, look, let's just, El Salvador's got like 4,800 Bitcoin. Let's just hold on to five. Let's sell 90% of this and hold on to 5,000 Bitcoin. Nope. Well, let's drive this thing to zero as fast as possible. It's so dumb, man. Like, I'm not the smartest guy in the world, but like, if somebody gave me 50,000 of anything, I would really need to consider whether I need to sell it all or not. Just, I'll take a breath and figure out what I got. If you gave me 50,000 of literally like anything, I would need to figure out if it's valuable or not.
Yeah. So speaking of El Salvador, there is another story that I've been reading about, and I'm not even sure if I'm going to say this right, but Suriname in Africa. Have you ever heard of that country?
Yeah, I have. I'm like, I feel like that's a geography question for like eighth grade in one test one time.
Yeah, well, I think it might start popping back up because of Bitcoin here pretty soon. So there is a lady there, Maya Parbo, who is now going to be running for president. And I've read a little bit about this, but that country in general has almost been cut off from the rest of the world because it's so corrupt. And everything they do is to scratch the political leader's back. The lady that's running, her dad kind of called somebody out back in the day because his business was drained with some dollars. And I don't know, the story looks like it had something to do with the CIA could have taken it and funded some terrorist organization somewhere else. So I don't know how true any of that is, but pretty much what they said is they went to court for it and the courts kept dropping it because those judges kept getting bought off. So they lost $13, $15 million, whatever it is, right? And now she has kind of been talking with Bukele at El Salvador, or at least talking with the El Salvador team and understanding what's going on. And she's thinking about running for president and changing everything over to kind of this Bitcoin standard over there. And that is to eliminate corruption and to bring her country back to having a chance to survive. Because right now it is so corrupt that unless you're part of the elite, you have no chance there. So I'll be intrigued to see what happens. And there's a good chance that if she runs, there might be another assassination attempt on her based on what it sounds like is going on over there, right? But it's exciting to see other smaller countries find a reason to adopt Bitcoin to better themselves.
Yeah, I mean, if you look back in history, you kind of got to be nervous when you're a politician that goes against the system. Like, you got Trump just got an assassination attempt. He recently adopted the Bitcoin stance. You got JFK assassinated. He was anti-war, anti-war machine, anti-CIA. I don't remember if he was anti-Fed or not, but Lincoln, anti-machine. So yeah, you got it. Like, assassination's on the table now. Like, it's super weird, man. So yeah, you got, like, the thing is, you have to try to make your country better, right? Like, if you see a problem, you should step up, and if you're inclined to be a politician, you should do it. But man, it's a perilous journey. Like, even if people do agree with you, if the machine does not, you know, it could be big trouble.
Well, I mean, you look at like somebody like a Lincoln, right, where he's looked now as one of the best presidents we've ever had, but almost everybody hated him during his whole term, right? I mean, he had so many naysayers that it was crazy. So
he's called a tyrant and a dictator. Like, yeah. I mean, the Democrats did not think highly of him, but when he was coming up.
To me, Teddy Roosevelt was another one that was kind of did what he wanted to do, right? And no one liked what he was doing, but
he caught a bullet too.
Yeah. And kept talking for an hour afterwards.
So, good thing he had his speech in his pocket. And it was a long speech.
South Korea was also in the news here recently. Speaking of regulation from other countries, they are delaying their crypto tax bill. It was going to start hitting in 2025, and now it's getting pushed out till 2028. And they have cited that they have infrastructure issues on how to actually deal with enforcing their tax bill. So, shocker. I mean, you would think the IRS would know what they're doing, but they still don't really know what they're doing. So it's, most countries are having that problem, still trying to figure out how to deal with crypto and everything that changes so quickly with all that. So my hope is it just keeps getting pushed out farther and further with every country, but I'm sure at some point it'll come to an end.
Yeah. I mean, we'll see. I'm just a lot going on, and it moves at such different rates. Things, some components of this stuff move really slowly and some move very quickly. And then sometimes the slow ones, like they hit a slope point and things move quickly. Like that's literally what, like you almost, if you're bullish on Bitcoin, you almost can't just sit on the sidelines and wait for a good time to buy, because if you know, a little bit different, but like if something happens that's very pro Bitcoin, the price may run and never come back, right? I mean, if you were at $10,000 in Bitcoin, or $10,000 Bitcoin, and you were just on the sidelines waiting for a buying opportunity, like it's never coming back. So, but you didn't know when it was going to run. The Bitcoin and crypto in general is it's very exciting, but you literally have no clue what's going to happen. In fact, the price and adoption.
Yeah. Well, one of the last things that I had that I wanted to talk about was related to RWAs, right? And I think it's kind of a big thing that's happening. So MakerDAO, which is probably the largest decentralized stablecoin out there, they have about $5 billion, I think, in their stablecoin. They have just announced that they plan to invest $1 billion of their reserves into tokenized U.S. treasuries. So, I mean, that's 20% of their entire reserves, which is kind of a big deal. So there are three companies, I think, right now that are all trying to go after it. BlackRock being one of them, Ondo, which Ondo is less. I mean, I think they're about half of that $1 billion from a market cap perspective right now. So that would be huge for them. And then I think SuperSlate is the other one. So they're all bidding on it. That market, from an RWA perspective, has tripled in the last year. The total market is like 1.8 billion, right? So they are now adding another 55%. Of the market size to that, theoretically, momentarily, right? So some pretty big news, and we're still just kind of getting started with RWAs. And I think that's going to be another trend that we see for quite a few more years coming to.
Yeah. Along the same lines, I listened to a podcast with Scott Melker, and he had the CEO of Tether on, and he mentioned that they're going to start a coin, it would be hard to consider it a stable coin, but instead of being backed like Tether, I'm speaking in weird ways because this isn't on my list of things to talk about. Tether's backed by assets and US dollar treasuries. And although it's not fully transparent, there's the assumption that dollar for dollar, there's value backing Tether on the open market, and it's a stable coin, so it's pegged to the dollar. He was talking about pegging a currency, cryptocurrency, to a gold store. And so buying gold, holding it, and then dollar for dollar issuing another currency that's backed by gold. You're starting trust here, right? Because I'm assuming they're not going to be the one to custody the gold. So you have that issue of the person custodying gold having an issue, or the gold being tungsten on the tungsten core with a quarter or a half inch of gold around it, like we saw JP Morgan happen to them. So you got that issue. You got, you know, Tether and the custodian have to be on the same page and everything. And then Tether itself has to not issue more of the gold. So, you know, with the real world assets, I mean, that's kind of bridging the gap, I think, between stablecoins and RWA. It would be interesting to see it actually happen, because then you can tokenize gold. If you could tokenize gold, like I would say tokenizing gold is a very reasonable thing to do. Tokenizing real estate may be a derivative from tokenizing gold, right? Because gold's like fungible, you know, an ounce of gold here versus an ounce of gold there is all the same. Real estate, not so much. So anyway, I thought that was interesting, and I thought it might tie into that, and maybe they can play, and a company like Tether that is profiting like $6 billion a quarter, they can play in that sandbox in a big way and learn some stuff that, you know, some of these other smaller crypto guys, if they learn a lesson, they're bankrupt.
Yeah, Tether is definitely trying to expand out to a lot of other applications for sure, and not just be a stablecoin issuer anymore.
Yeah, yeah. Companies tend to have to grow, or if you're not growing, you're dying. And Bitcoin doesn't have to. Bitcoin just does. Bitcoin's just Bitcoin. Like, I think that's like one of the difference makers that you see when you kind of get deeper into this and start to understand the difference between Bitcoin and crypto.
Anything else you wanted to chat about?
Yeah, I got a couple things. One, MicroStrategy's got a 10-to-1 reverse split.
Yep.
So, you know, it's been quite a while since MicroStrategy's been under $1,000 a share. So 10-to-1 reverse split brings, I think when it announced, it was like $1,300 a share. So, you know, it brings into that 130, whatever, low $100 per share. A, I like it because you've got a unit bias issue. Two, for some reason, MicroStrategy is still not in the S&P 500, even though they're in the 300 to 400 range as far as company size or market cap. And so maybe that, you know, when you look at the chart, go from $80 a share to $1,300, and it's right on the Bitcoin chart map too. When you compare the two, I don't know, maybe there's a play here to kind of get themselves in the S&P 500 and kind of re-normalize their share price. And also I'm like, well, maybe they're really confident that like I am that Bitcoin's price is about to run, and $4,000 or $5,000 a share doesn't make sense. So they're kind of getting in front of that before the Bitcoin price runs and their stock price runs with it. So I thought that was an interesting move. I don't know that it's early to do that, but they've been over 1,000 for quite a while. So that's kind of dollar share price.
Well, I think it kind of makes sense for people that are doing 401ks and things like that, where you have a few hundred dollars a month that are, or every paycheck, whatever, that is going into the 401k. If it's only a few hundred dollars, you can't buy a $1,400 stock. Right. You have to wait for a month for it to build up, or longer to be able to buy one of that. Going down to $100, $130, you can go pick up a share of MicroStrategy. You can do something like that every month or every week, whatever it's going to be. Right. So I think it makes sense from that perspective. I don't know how it changes from an S&P 500 getting into there, or just being in an ETF already, that if you're buying that, that'd be great too. Right. But yeah, I'm hoping that makes it easier to acquire for other people.
And then the other piece, I was like scrolling through Twitter, and Michael Dell quote tweeted Larry Fink when Larry Fink was on CNBC talking about that he admitted he was a Bitcoin skeptic. He's done the research. He's found that it's a legitimate financial instrument. You know, it's an uncorrelated asset, and it's good if you're a person who's scared of currency debasement. It's a good place to put your money. So I think he didn't say if you're a gold bug, if the alternative, that if you're scared of currency debasement, maybe the alternative is like gold. And he even mentioned, like, if you're scared of the your country, of like what's going on in your country, you can kind of take it with you. He alluded to that. He didn't say it outright, but just he said there's legitimate use cases for this. And he's not just, well, he's saying he's not just doing it to make money. So to me, that's something when Michael Dell retweets Larry Fink on a highly watched investment show that is very pro Bitcoin. So, you know, the sentiment is very good for Bitcoin right now.
Well, Michael Dell has definitely been that name thrown around quite a bit here lately, that he has been very pro crypto in general. And as soon as he turns on his crypto buying spree, it's going to make things very interesting for everybody else too.
Yeah, my guess is he'll do it in a way that's pretty smart. Like, it's called the Michael Saylor, how to buy Bitcoin without rocking the market. And unlike Germany, I think Michael Dell will be able to say, I bought X number of Bitcoin at an average price of Y, and the market will never know it.
Yeah.
That's it for me. My list is complete.
Yeah, I can't wait for him to make that announcement. I think that'll be exciting.
Yeah, you start doing that. You know, when it's one guy, he might be crazy. You know, when it's two, you might need to start paying attention. And Michael Dell, I mean, you want to talk about being able to look forward. You know, remember, I'm old enough to remember Dell was the computer to buy like, you know, Gateway and Dell were kind of revolutionizing putting good computers in people's houses, good desktop computers. So, like, and then I think he got into the server stuff way before everybody else was, before offices were buying servers. I mean, almost all those server decks that I saw working for companies were Dell servers for a long time. So, you know, pay attention to the guys that are forward looking because they're good at stuff.
I agree. Awesome. We hit on Germany a lot, but we also talked about some other things on this one. So this is a fun one.
Did not anticipate talking about Germany that much. And I am kind of glad we didn't talk about the Trump thing from a political or whatever tactical standpoint. Because every other podcast and every other news source is breaking down that entire thing. So, yeah, we didn't need to spend 45 minutes talking about that and 15 minutes talking about Bitcoin and crypto.
Exactly. Awesome. Well, we'll chat next week.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
If all of these crypto conversations leave you with more questions and you're looking for answers, I've created a product that dives into most of those answers, including why crypto, how to set up a cold wallet, and some of the more advanced strategies for dealing with crypto. Check the link in the notes below and hope to see you there.